From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A Canadian court granted bail to a senior executive of China's Huawei Technologies 10 days after she was detained in Vancouver on a U.S. arrest warrant, triggering a major diplomatic row. Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, who's the daughter of its founder, faces U.S. claims that her company bypassed Washington's anti-Iran sanctions. Those sanctions were the subject of a discussion at the U.N. Security Council on Wednesday. Fazad Hassanpour filed this report for Iran's Press TV.
Since U.S. President Donald Trump pulled out of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal in May, Europe has repeatedly pledged to take action to neutralize the consequences of Washington's withdrawal. Trump's decision was followed by the reimposition of anti-Iran sanctions, which had been lifted under the nuclear agreement, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. The European Union intends to establish a system to facilitate non-dollar trade with the Islamic Republic and bypass U.S. sanctions. It funds the so-called Special Purpose Vehicle, SPV, trade mechanism to help preserve the economic benefits for Tehran deriving from the curbs it put on its nuclear program under the JCPOA. On Monday, the EU foreign policy chief said the SPV could be in place by the year end.
I would expect this instrument to be established in the coming weeks, so before the end of the year, as a way to protect and to promote legitimate business with Iran.
Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says the European Union's offers to save the JCPOA have failed so far to meet the country's expectations, but the Islamic Republic has remained committed to the JCPOA, giving Europe an opportunity to fulfill its promises to save Iran's interests on the court. Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has, however, warned that Tehran could not wait forever to reap the economic benefits of the deal. Now the ball is in Europe's court to practically fulfill its pledges regarding the implementation of the JCPOA, as Iran has warned it could ditch the nuclear deal if EU powers do not protect its trade and financial interests.
Those sanctions were before the UN Security Council Wednesday, where U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Iran's Deputy Permanent Representative exchanged their points of view. This was U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
Just 2 days ago, the head of the IRGC's airspace division, Amir Adizadeh, boasted that Iran is capable of building missiles with a range beyond 2,000 kilometers. He said, quote, "We have the ability to build missiles with broader ranges. We don't have limitations from a technical perspective." End of quote. He also said there are many enemy bases within 800 kilometers of Iran. In other words, within striking distance of Iranian missiles. He bragged that Iran does 40 to 50 tests per year. As I'll talk about further, it is clear that the Iranian regime's ballistic missile activity has grown since the nuclear deal. Iran has exploited the goodwill of nations and defied multiple Security Council resolutions in its quest for a robust ballistic missile force. The United States will never stand for this. No nation that seeks peace and prosperity in the Middle East should either. Since 2006, this council has been telling Iran to stop testing and proliferating ballistic missiles in one form or another. From 2010 to 2015, Iran was subject to UN Security Council Resolution 1929, the strictest resolution addressing the Iranian ballistic missiles to date. In that resolution, the Security Council decided that Iran shall not undertake any activity related to ballistic missiles capable of delivering nuclear weapons, including launches using ballistic missile technology, and that states shall take necessary measures to prevent the transfer of technology or technical assistance to Iran related to such activities. This provision of UNSCR 1929 imposed a legal prohibition on Iran's ballistic missile activity. There was force of law behind those words. Nevertheless, Iran conducted multiple ballistic missile launches between 2010 and 2015 in flagrant violation of that resolution. So what do we do in response? Did we increase accountability in Iran for serial violations of international law? Quite the opposite. In fact, the level of accountability in Iran has diminished instead of decreased, while the risk has increased. In connection with the Iranian regime's engagement in nuclear talks and at the Obama administration's urging, the Security Council replaced Resolution 1929 with Resolution 2231. Resolution 2231 calls upon Iran not to undertake any activity related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons. Notwithstanding that change in language, the world's concerns remain. When we collectively call upon Iran to cease its ballistic missile activity, we must agree to stop it now. But Iran is as defiant of the world's insistence as ever. Because here we are, for the 12th year in a row, meeting about Iran's ballistic missiles, addressing an incredibly problematic data set. Iran's pace of missile activity, including missile launches and tests, did not diminish since the JCPOA. In fact, Iran's missile testing and missile proliferation is growing. Today, Iran has the largest ballistic missile force in the Middle East. It has more than 10 ballistic missile systems in its inventory or in development. It has hundreds of missiles, which pose a threat to our partners in the region. From more recent times, in 2016, during the time of the JCPOA, Iran unveiled two new short-range ballistic missiles, which it claims are capable of striking targets between 500 and 700 kilometers. In January of 2017, during the time of the JCPOA, Iran launched a medium-range missile designed to carry a payload greater than 500 kilograms and which could be used to carry nuclear warheads. Its suspected range also approaches 2,000 kilometers, which is far enough to target Athens, Sofia, Bucharest, and other major European cities. If the IRGC airspace commander is telling the truth and Iran has capabilities beyond 2,000 kilometers, other European capitals are at risk as well. In July of 2017, while the United States was still in the JCPOA, Iran tested a Simorgh space launch vehicle. The United States, France, Germany, and the UK all assessed that the launch was inconsistent with 2231 because space launch vehicle use uses a similar technology as intercontinental ballistic missiles. Iran has exported ballistic missile systems as well, most recently to Yemen. We have hard evidence that Iran is providing missiles, training, and support to the Houthis, and the Iranian Houthi missile force is fully engaged. This poses a threat to innocent civilians, including Americans living in Riyadh, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, as well as people of all nationalities who travel on civilian aircraft in that region. Iran is also transferring ballistic missile systems to Shia militias in Iraq. And just look at the last 2 weeks. The Iranian regime test-fired a medium-range ballistic missile that is capable of carrying multiple warheads. Our goodwill gestures have been futile. Futile in correcting the Iranian regime's reckless missile activity and its destructive behaviors. No nation can dispute that Iran is in open defiance of UN Security Council Resolution 2231. The United States is not alone in raising these concerns. I'd like to thank France and Germany and the United Kingdom for raising concerns about Iranian missile proliferation to the Secretariat. I would also like to thank our partners from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates who are working with UN inspectors in recovering material debris of Iranian-supplied missiles, rockets, and UAVs launched into their countries by Houthi forces in Yemen. Our Israeli allies have brought further evidence to the Security Council about Iran's continued launches of ballistic missiles that are inherently capable of carrying nuclear weapons. Israel has also given evidence to the Secretariat of Iran's transfer of weapon systems to its proxies all around the Middle East, and in defiance of what we have insisted that they do. So the question now, what steps ought we take to confront this Iranian malign activity? We risk the security of our people if Iran continues stocking up on ballistic missiles. We risk escalation of conflict in the region if we fail to restore deterrence. And we convey to all other malign actors that they too can defy the Security Council with impunity if we do nothing. The United Nations Charter, as you all know well, calls the primary responsibility, bestows upon the Security Council the primary responsibility for the maintenance of international peace and security. We all take this responsibility seriously. The United States seeks to work with all other members of the Council to reimpose on Iran the ballistic missile restrictions outlined in 1929. Beyond addressing Iran's ballistic missile activities, the Council should not lift the arms embargo in 2020 on Iran. This is a country in noncompliance with multiple UN Security Council resolutions, including those related to Al-Qaeda, Afghanistan, Lebanon, Yemen, and Somalia. Iran is harboring Al-Qaeda, supporting Taliban militants in Afghanistan, arming terrorists in Lebanon, facilitating illicit trade in Somali charcoal benefiting al-Shabaab, and training and equipping Shia militias in Iraq, even as we sit here today. It is also stoking conflict in Syria and Yemen. The Council must address these malign activities. It cannot reward Iran by lifting the arms embargo. We also call on the Council to establish inspection and interdiction measures in ports and on the high seas to thwart Iran's continuing efforts to circumvent the existing arms restrictions. Some have questioned our decision to withdraw from the JCPOA. We reply that it is self-evident why we did so, based upon the very conversation we're having here today. Prior to the deal, Western leaders made grand claims of how the JCPOA would usher in a new era of moderation from the Iranian regime. Indeed, America's own president said, quote, ideally, we would see a situation in which Iran, seeing sanctions reduced, would start focusing on its economy, on training its people, on reentering the world community, to lessening its provocative activities in the region. But what do we actually see? The JCPOA has, without a doubt, to date, shielded the Islamic Republic of Iran from the accountability to the risks it presents to the world. The Iranian regime is pursuing the same destructive, revolutionary goals that it has for the past 39 years, except now it has more money to achieve them, thanks to the nuclear deal. I'm here today first and foremost as my capacity as the Secretary of State of the United States of America. Under President Trump, the security of our people and our allies comes first. But in the finest traditions of American leadership, the United States will continue to unite sovereign nations in their responsibility to work for the peace and security of their own people and a stable international order. The United States is going to continue to be relentless in building a coalition of responsible nations who are serious in confronting the Iranian regime's reckless ballistic missile activity. This includes the treatment of its own people as well. That type of malign activity is something that the United States will keep standing side by side with the people of Iran. They have been the worst victims of the regime for nearly 40 years, and they have the unwavering support of the United States. Finally, the Trump administration clearly defined in May the 12 areas in which we are demanding change from Iran. If Iran makes a fundamental strategic shift and honors these demands, we are prepared to ease our pressure campaign and support the modernization and reintegration of the Iranian economy into the international economic system. But relief from our efforts will come only when we see tangible, demonstrated, and sustained shifts in Tehran's policies. Thank you.
Pompeo's remarks were addressed by Iran's Deputy Representative Mehdi Danish Yadzi at the end of Wednesday's session.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Mr. President, distinguished colleagues, ambassadors, I would like to begin by sincerely thanking those council members who reaffirmed their commitment to continue supporting the JCPOA. At a time when multilateralism is under threat, preserving the JCPOA, which according to the United Nations Secretary General, is a demonstration of successful multilateralism and a major achievement in dialogue and diplomacy, is of utmost importance. From this perspective, we laud the call by distinguished Secretary General in his report that the JCPOA participants, the Council, all member states and regional and other international actors must ensure the continuity of this agreement that is fundamental to regional and international peace and security. In this meeting that is held to consider the implementation of Resolution 2231, the Council should therefore consider and address all obstacles created in its implementation, in particular its provisions on promoting and facilitating the development of normal economic and trade contact and cooperation with Iran. As it is well known, the sustainability of the JCPOA has been seriously challenged by unilateral and unlawful conducts of the United States in withdrawing from the JCPOA and reimposing illegal sanctions against Iran. It is a clear violation of the resolution that calls upon all states without exception, which includes the United States, not only to take action as may be appropriate to support the implementation of the JCPOA, but also to refrain from action that undermine implementation of commitments under the JCPOA. Therefore, the Council should consider the United States' illegal acts as a flagrant violation of the resolution and hold it accountable for such violations. It is evident that any inaction or leniency in taking appropriate action to prevent the violation of resolution will only embolden the United States to continue its unlawful practices and irresponsible policies. The irony is that the United States, who itself is in absolute violation of the resolution 2231, today accused Iran of violating this resolution. What we heard today was another series of lies, fabrication, disinformation, and deceptive statements by the United States. It is not unprecedented. Just recall in famous speeches made in the past at this very chamber by the United States officials. It is not surprising, too. Deception is an inseparable part of the United States foreign policy, as is bullying and its addiction to sanction and warmongering. A clear example of such policies in the American approach toward Iran's peaceful nuclear program, on which it manufactured an unnecessary crisis and were successful in abusing this Council to impose illegal sanctions. Nevertheless, as soon as it was ended with the conclusion of the JCPOA and the IAEA repeatedly confirmed Iran's full compliance with its commitment, the United States withdrew from the JCPOA, violated Resolution 2231, reimposed its illegal sanction, and started punishing states who abide by the resolution. Such policies and practices clearly indicate that, even in the past, they did not have any genuine concern about Iran's nuclear program. Now, for the first time in the United Nations history, a permanent member of this Security Council is blatantly punishing United Nations member states not for violating, rather for complying with the Security Council resolution. That is the first time in the history of the Security Council. And yet, the U.S. find the audacity to hijack the Council to intensify its hostilities against Iran. We have not forgotten the days when the United States has rendered this Council ineffective in preventing Saddam's aggression, stopping the use of chemical weapons against Iranian, as well as addressing the attacks to the Iranian civil aircraft over the Persian Gulf by the American forces, killing all 290 people on board, including 66 children. Rather than allowing the U.S. to repeat such abusive patterns, the Council should strongly condemn the U.S. for reimposing its illegal sanction against Iranian in violation of the United Nations Charter and international law. This sanction only harms the ordinary and, more importantly, vulnerable people of Iran, such as women, children, elderly, and patients. They prevent even the import of basic food, medicine, and medical devices to Iran. Unlike the U.S. declaration, in practice, there is no exception or exemption for importing such needs. Now, they argue that banks don't have confidence in Iran's banking system to facilitate those transactions. That's Iran's problem. It is not our problem. Isn't it ironic and disgraceful? How come they had confidence to Iran's banking system till weeks ago and suddenly and for no reason lost their confidence? In fact, they avoid such transaction because they are intimidated and threatened by a bullying and irresponsible state. On 7th November 2018, the United States Secretary of State threatened all Iranians to mass starvation. He said, the Iranian, quote, leadership has to make a decision that they want their people to eat. That is the statement of the Secretary of State of the United States. Does weaponizing of food and medicine against civilians have any other designation than crime against humanity? Isn't the disruption of free trade and application of the United States national laws to other nations, thus disrespecting their sovereignty, a clear manifestation of economic terrorism? The international community should stand against American bullying policies, and the U.S. authorities should be held to account for ordering, committing, and enforcing such horrible crimes. Mr. President, through fabrication, disinformation, and invoking irrelevant criteria, the United States tries to create ambiguity and confusion in order to misinterpret the resolution with regard to Iran's missile launches. Here, I draw your attention to the interpretation of relevant paragraphs of the resolution by the U.S. Special Envoy on Iran, not by Iran. By the U.S. Special Envoy on Iran, who says that the resolution simply and kindly calls upon Iran not to undertake certain activities. He then concludes that the resolution's language is hardly a clear and enforceable prohibition. Iran's ballistic missile program is designed to be exclusively capable of delivering conventional warheads required to deter foreign threats. While the Americans argue that Iran's security concerns are entirely self-generated, and also hypocritically state that Iran faces no natural threat from Israel. As recently as 3 months ago, its prime minister threatened Iran with even nuclear annihilation. That was the threat by Prime Minister of Israel. Definitely a wishful dream. Moreover, no one can ignore consistent, tremendous threats Iran continues to face from United States itself, in particular through its outdated mantra of all options are on the table, which means military threat. They are dreaming wishfully to move us back to those days when Saddam's planes bombed an Iranian city for 105 minutes, the longest aerial assault since World War II, killing and injuring over 1,000 civilians. They also wish to move us back to those days when Saddam was raining missiles on our cities, some of them carrying chemical component provided by the United States, and Iran was actively prevented from purchasing even the most rudimentary means of self-defense to at least deter the aggressor. Do not be surprised. They even prevented the export of barbed wire to Iran. Most of such restrictions still continue. We have paid a very high price to save our territory from the aggressors and to ensure the security of our borders and citizens. Those days have long passed. Living in such a volatile region as the Middle East, our government will not and cannot compromise on its security and its conventional defensive capability as no other country does. Describing Iran as a source of regional threat is nothing but a blame shift in order to sell more American beautiful weapons, as the United States President calls them. Conflict, insecurity, and instability in our region has two main sources, occupation of Palestine by Israel and the American intervention and its massive military buildup in our region. Who can also forget the U.S. role, as openly confessed by its president during his campaign, in creating the ugliest face of terrorism, the monstrous ISIS? If it was not for Iran's support and help, the black flag of ISIS was still flying around the Middle East. Our neighboring countries repeatedly acknowledged and praised Iran's role in fighting and defeating Daesh in that country. In reaction to Iran's prominent role in fighting terrorist groups in Syria and Iraq, such groups have conducted a few terrorist attacks in Iran in 2017 and 2018, including in our parliament. Today, in addition to transferring ISIS elements to Afghanistan and Central Asian countries, the U.S. has extended its sponsorship of terrorism to a vicious terrorist cult, the MKO, Mujahideen Khalq, that has murdered more than 17,000 Iranians, including children, women, girls, officials, ordinary people, and many Iraqis also, and who currently cozy up to the highest political figures in Washington to destabilize Iran through terrorist activities. Here, Mr. President, I would like to stress that, according to the Charter, this Council represents all member states. Thus, its decision should also echo their views. Almost all members of this organization have strongly supported the JCPOA and loudly voiced their rejection of the illegal unilateral sanction that is a clear violation of the Resolution 2231. Consequently, the Council should hold the U.S. accountable for reimposing such sanction and demand that the U.S. end their application. This also would be in line with the obligation imposed on the U.S. by the ICJ's order issued unanimously on 3rd October 2018, an order which is a clear testament to the illegality of the U.S. sanctions. I would also like to clarify that our legal and technical observation on the report of the Secretary General is contained in a letter that yesterday I have sent to Your Excellency. It also covered our views on issues that I did not address in my remarks today. I thank you, Mr. President.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.